Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to church on this fine Sunday morning, and everybody made it, which is encouraging. We didn't see the end of the world happen. I don't know if anyone realized. So the world was meant to end yesterday. Did you not know? You'd not been reading your Bibles? No, so there was a biblical prophecy that the world was meant to end on September 23rd, which was yesterday, I believe. Yeah, not today. All right, that's good. But we all made it. I was a little bit worried when I first came to church. I came a bit early. There wasn't many people here. And I was starting to wonder, did I miss the rapture? Have I missed the moment? I saw Paul and I was relieved. And I was like, no, it's okay. We're going to be all right. And to see the church fly to this morning is definitely very encouraging. We're going to be in Luke chapter 14, carrying on with our Luke series. And the title of the message this morning is Count the Cost. And I want to read to you a statement about an Italian general some of you may know, Giuseppe Garibaldi. Is that right, Biagio? I got his advice this morning. Giuseppe Garibaldi. And he was a famous kind of Italian general back in the 19th century, and considered one of the founders of Italy as well itself. But back in July of 1849, pressured by an arriving French army, the Roman Constituent Assembly decreed the surrender of Rome and of the Republic. Garibaldi decided it would be best to pack his bags and get out of town. And on July 2nd of 1849, a wounded and torn Garibaldi was at St. Peter's Square in Rome, Anita, his wife, by his side, addressing anybody who was willing to continue the fight and follow him. He said this, he says, "Soldiers, I am going out from Rome. Let those who wish to continue the war against the stranger come with me. I offer neither pay, nor quarters, nor provisions. I offer hunger, thirst, forced marches, battles, and death. Let him who loves his country with his heart and not merely his lips follow me." That was Garibaldi's rousing speech to get people to follow him and join him in war. You know, the speech actually showed incredible results. And at 8 o'clock that night, he left Rome with almost 4,000 soldiers, 800 horsemen, ammunition, and a basic equipment for a small army. And later on, went on to be one of the most successful military commanders of his time. And we know about him so much today. The reason I share that story is in Luke chapter 14, Jesus has some choice words for those who are going to follow him. I think they're very relevant for us this morning as we consider what it means to follow Christ and what that's going to take in our lives in the 21st century. So read with me in Luke chapter 14, and we'll be reading from verse 25. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. And in the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. It is thrown out. He who has ears, let him hear." For a traveling preacher with a message to get out, you would think that if you had large crowds and multitudes of people following you, that would be a good thing. Maybe you would turn to them and give them some inspiring, encouraging words to spur them on in this difficult time, to get them to continue to follow you. Jesus' first words, he turns around to the crowd and he says, "Unless you hate father, mother, brother, wife, children, you flat out cannot be my disciples. Don't call yourselves Christians if you're not willing to pay that price." Challenging words if you're following. If you were there right at that moment, it would be stirring. I think it would be very, very challenging to hear these words. Firstly, I think when he says hate, I don't think he literally means to hate. We see that would contradict so many of his other teachings, even loving your enemies, let alone your family and the great commandments and everything else. So we're called to love friends, and we're called to love family, and we're called to honor mothers and fathers and wives and children and everything else. But I think it's a comparative statement when he's sharing this. That compared to our love for him, it's as though we would hate these other people around us. It's because we love God so much. Because the most important thing is fulfilling the great commandment, is loving God with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, that nothing and no one would get in the way of that. It's similar in Genesis 29:31, where it talks about Leah and Rachel, and it says that Leah was hated, but Rachel was loved. And it doesn't mean hated, but it meant that Leah was more loved than Rachel, that Rachel was more loved than Leah was. Or in Romans 9:13, where God says, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. It doesn't literally mean he hated Esau, but it means Jacob was his chosen one. He was part of the chosen nation, and Jacob was the one who through him was going to be the promises fulfilled. So when Jesus turns around and says that here, it's the same thing. It's a comparative statement. But what it does mean for us is it means that no person, no relationship, nothing in any, all creation, whether it be a person or a thing, should come in between us following Jesus. And many of us in this room have had to pay those prices. Many of us will at some point. Whether it be turning to Jesus and deciding to become a Christian and you're disowned by your parents. Your parents decide, if you become a Christian, you're not going to stay in this house anymore. And you're not going to live this life. Well, Jesus said, well, if that's the case, then that's what you've got to do. Whether it be a partner or a spouse who's not living as a Christian. And you've got to decide, am I going to keep following Jesus? Would it even be sometimes where it's young, if it's your parents that were once Christians and introduced you to the faith, or the person that helped you become a Christian, and they turn away? But Jesus said, well, you've got to keep following. You've got to remain steadfast. And I think it's challenging for us this morning. I think one of the biggest challenges for us is we fall into this consumerism mindset, especially when it comes, I think, to religion as well. In our culture, in Western culture, most of the time we're asking, If there's an opportunity or a situation, it's what can I get out of it? What's in it for me? Most of our lives revolve around seeking kind of our pleasure, or at least for those closest to us, what can we get out of this? And I think we can evaluate religion in those terms as well. I think that's why many people today reject Jesus and reject Christianity, because they ask the question, well, what's in it for me? Is it going to give me a good life, a comfortable life? And unfortunately, many preachers will stand in the pulpit and they'll preach messages like that. That if you come to Jesus, you'll live a great life and you'll get riches and you'll get wealth and you'll get comfort. And Jesus, he's just there to look after your needs. And all God cares about is you being happy and joyful and comfortable. And he's this big, powerful God that's just going to be instrumental in looking after you and your needs. And they'll preach messages like that. And some of that is true, and God is a good God, and he does love us, and he does want the best for us. But what he calls us to do is he calls us to make sacrifice to follow him. He calls us to put him first in our lives. I've got a video I want to show you. And it's even just in about evaluating church. Of even natural disasters in people's lives. It challenges us to kind of reevaluate sometimes. Kind of, what am I living for? What is my life counting for? You know, my first point was an epic invitation. Jesus gives us an incredible invitation. My second point is monumental considerations. You know, what Jesus says next in back in Luke chapter 14. In verse 27, he says, and anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. He says, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Would he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays a foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build and was not able to finish. He calls his followers to count the cost, to think ahead. Okay, and he gives a story. Imagine someone's building a tower. Well, if you build a tower, and I don't think many of us are tower builders, okay? But if you undertake a project, you think through what's it going to take to complete this project. So with a tower, you think, how much time is this going to take? How much money is this going to take? How much energy is this going to take? What sacrifices am I going to need to make in other areas of my life? Am I going to need help from other people? How's that going to work? And you think it through, and then you make a decision. Okay, now let's build the tower. But what he says, these people, it's not about making emotional decisions. Or when we make snap, yeah, yeah, great, I'll follow you. And, oh, yeah, great, I'll build a tower. And not really thinking through what it's actually going to take and the cost you're going to need to make. Jesus wants us to evaluate, what's it going to take for me to follow him for the rest of my life? Until I die, until Jesus calls me home, whenever that may be, what is it going to take to follow him? And he makes this statement just before it. He says, anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. You cannot be a Christian, effectively, if you don't carry your cross and follow me. I think in some ways this statement is quite misunderstood today and maybe overused in some ways. Sometimes we can think, you know, carrying my cross is just any kind of burdens or ailments we might have. It would be a challenging situation or a health ailment or a difficult situation. We think, well, that's just my cross to bear. Absolutely, that is not what carrying your cross meant back in those days. Carrying your cross, what was the cross? The cross was a Roman torture device. It was a device used basically to dissuade rebellion, to strike fear into the hearts of the people, to literally make people's hearts melt like wax. That if anyone were to think of opposing Rome, to being countercultural, to standing out in any way, there would be the cross, and that was what was waiting for you. Basically, do not mess with the establishment. The cross is directly linked to persecution, not just challenges and difficulties and trials. And when he calls them to carry their cross and follow him, remember as well, Jesus hadn't even died yet at that time. He probably was referring to other people who had been crucified for rebellion or for standing out or for doing these kind of things. In fact, there's a famous story, well, not a story, kind of a history, back around when Jesus would have been a young boy, about the story of the town of Sepphoris. And what happened in this town of Sepphoris is there was an uprising of many thousands of Jews in this city. And that they basically tried to take a stronghold. It was when Herod had kind of, he'd either died or stepped down, I forget what it was, and they tried in that gap to overtake this stronghold, this treasury, this armory, basically. And they were successful at first, but the Roman vengeance was swift and was incredibly violent as well. They burnt the city of Sepphoris, and they killed or sold into slavery about 30,000 of its inhabitants. And what they did is they took some of the young men, some of the bravest and the brightest, and in one day they crucified 2,000 of these young men. And they put their crosses along the roads from Sepphoris leading to all the other cities and towns surrounding Sepphoris. That was the Roman way of dealing with rebellion. Now, what does that tell you if you live in those surrounding areas? It tells you don't mess with the Romans. Keep your head down, obey the status quo, don't rock the boat in any way. It would make you melt with fear. That's what the cross was designed for. So when Jesus first tells his followers, you've got to hate father, mother, brother. This is radical, okay? I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. I came to turn household against household. You've got to love me more than you love these people in these relationships. And then he says, and on top of that, you've got to carry your cross and follow me. You've got to associate with me. This is not political revolution, not even social. This is a spiritual revolution that I'm calling you towards. That was the challenge. That we are to be countercultural. We're to be different from those around us. That this is meant to look different from everything going on in your world around you. And for many of you, it will lead to death on a cross. For us today, it doesn't necessarily have that same impact. Living as a Christian today probably doesn't lead to that heavy a persecution. In some places of the world, it does still today. And we have faithful Christians, faithful brothers and sisters undergoing those kinds of persecutions. But we know that people in the crowd did undergo this persecution. When in Matthew, he was hung on a cross. We know Peter was hung on a cross. We know John was boiled alive. We know that so many of the people in that crowd, in fact, all of the original 12 died horrible deaths. They were dragged through streets. They were beaten to death. They were crucified upside down. John was the only one survived. And I believe he was boiled alive in oil and survived and was in prison for most of his life. They underwent horrible torture. When Seamus and Kay did, they gave away loads of books. You remember that? They were giving lots of books away at church. I picked up one book. It was called The Book of Martyrs. And it's all about Christian history and the different martyrdoms that went on all throughout history. Obviously, Jesus being the first, then Stephen, James, and on throughout him. And I was hooked just reading these stories. It was incredible just hearing the persecutions that went on. And I mean, it's grime. Many of us have heard about the Nero of Rome and how he kind of burnt the city, blamed it on the Christians, and then just did horrible things to them. I mean, the Christians would be sewn together with wild animal skins and thrown to beasts to be devoured. They were put in kind of wax shirts and hung on trees and lit on fire in his garden. Horrible, horrible things happened to these people. I remember when I was in Ephesus recently, when I was visiting Turkey, and I stood in the Colosseum, this huge Colosseum in Ephesus. And just, it was very sobering being there and looking down and realizing Christians would have literally died here. They would have been killed. They'd have been torn apart for their faith. And all throughout, the common theme you see is the steadfast resilience of the Christians to denounce their faith. They would stand strong till death, till persecution, till this incredible torture. They didn't relent of their faith. And it convinced so many other people. Like the fact they were under heavy persecution, but it kept growing. That was the spirit of Christianity back in the first times. And in some ways, our challenge is so much more, is so different. Because we don't face that level of persecution. Hardly any of us going out preaching. We can preach boldly if we want to out in the streets, and no one's going to kill us necessarily. We might get some hard words thrown our way. And that makes me realize just how wimpy I am sometimes, that these guys could face this level of persecution. And I get fearful of just opening my mouth with someone on the street and sharing my faith. Or speaking because I'm worried about what that person's going to think of me. Or how the people around me are going to judge me. You see, I think it was so black and white. If you're going to be a Christian, you're going to die. I think today, Satan's tactics are a little bit different with us. He muddies the waters more with us today. See, for Jesus, unless you carried your cross, unless you hated mother and father, because you were gonna die for this. If you were literally gonna die for this if you lived out the Christian faith boldly and radically back in the day. For us today, it's different. We're not gonna face that level of persecution. So the waters are a bit muddied. So for us today, what we think is we can have Christianity and keep all of our comforts and everything else. What we try and do is we try and kind of keep our heads down, live the 007 Christian life, you know, not upset the status quo a little bit too much. Occasionally, we'll do something a little bit challenging, but it's nothing too radical that stretches too much because we don't want to upset the status quo. Because what we're told, what people have preached this day and age is that you can have Jesus and keep all of your comforts and keep your own life and everything you've got. That you can follow Jesus and it really doesn't require that much sacrifice. It's just about a belief or saying a prayer or whatever it might be. It doesn't require that much change of your life. That's what we're preached to today. Not in this church, that's not what we preach in the pulpit here, but it's what we can hear in our culture. What we're told subconsciously is you have your faith, that's fine, I'm going to allow that, we're very tolerating society, just don't come and shove it down my throat. Your truth is your truth, my truth is my truth. Because again, people evaluate a religion and what can I get out of it, what do I want? It's kind of like picking a football team, which one shall I follow? I'll follow this one, this looks really good. This church kind of offers this, that's quite comfortable. We live the comfortable life. But the challenge is still the same for us today. Whether we're going to die or not, whether we're going to be persecuted to that intensity or not, it's to follow Jesus with everything we have. That we have a willingness to give up anything, to go anywhere, to do anything, to make any kind of sacrifice for the gospel. And for us today, sometimes maybe that means changes in our job circumstance or changes in a geographical location or changes in our habits and our lifestyle. Things which we can kind of pick up, which entangle us, which slow us down, which distract us from living the Christian life the way we're called to. Because we kind of want sometimes to live our life comfortably and have Jesus and the salvation and everything else as well. But the challenge is still the same today. We can't have both. And that's the cost that we need to count. And we need to consider what it really means to follow Jesus, what it's really going to take, and how we can do that. My final point is unconditional surrender. Back in Luke chapter 14, in verse 31, it says this. It says, "Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything cannot be my disciple." So here Jesus kind of tells another story to illustrate this a little bit more. He says, like, imagine this. Imagine there's two armies, two kings kind of coming against each other. One's got 10,000 men and the other's got 20,000 men. So you automatically think, which one's going to win? And you think, well, if the 10,000 are Spartans, they've got it in the bag, right? But no, it's the illustration is they're just going to be overpowered. They're outmanned, they're outgunned, there's no hope. So what you do, if you've got an army coming towards you of 20,000 and you've got a mere 10,000, what you do is you send a delegation when they get close to your gates. No, why, they're a long way off. Because by the time they've got close to your gates, they've probably traveled long enough that, no, we'll probably just wipe you out now and take everything you've got, right? But he said, no, you send a delegation while they're a long way off and you try to offer terms of peace as you try and discuss. What does this mean in this context? I think in many ways, we're the small army and God's the big army in some ways. And we don't have a hope of kind of fighting or opposing or... And then actually, when he talks about sending a delegation and asking for terms of peace... What are the terms of peace? Well, it says here, in the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. The terms of peace for us are unconditional surrender to the almighty, all-powerful God. We don't negotiate and say, okay, I'll do a little bit of this discipleship, but this stuff is a bit too challenging, I don't want to do that. Or I'll have a little bit, that sounds great, but I'm going to hold this back. It's not a negotiation process when it comes to this. It's a process of unconditional surrender. We look and we decide. So for us as well, it's counting the cost of following Jesus and what that's going to take. But it's also counting the cost of not following Jesus. Count the cost of what that means to live your life opposed to the living God. To live your life standing as an enemy of the cross of Christ. To live your life in darkness. That's what it talks about. That is the line that the Bible draws. Either you're in light or darkness. Either you're in sin or you're washed clean. Either you're a son of God or you're an enemy of God because of your sin. We're not, it doesn't, there's no middle ground for being a nice person and doing good deeds every now and then. And we can kind of have both worlds. It doesn't work like that. So truly, if we remain enemies in that sense, then when we die, there really is no hope. There's only a fearful judgment to come. But what Jesus is reminding us is of what he is offering to us, of the incredible life that he gives us. And Jesus isn't some evil, tyrannical king coming to wipe us out, all right? And that's not the illustration we're trying to get in our minds. He's not this king coming to crush us and suppress us and overpower us. No, he is a loving and faithful king. He's the kind of king that dies for his people. He's the kind of king that set an example and leadership of love. He is a revolutionary and radical king that is countercultural to our culture and every culture that's ever been, other than the kingdom culture, which he established and continues to this day. And we are called to follow him. We are called to live our lives in that same radical way. I want to show you one last video clip. In the spirit of the world possibly ending yesterday, this was kind of a funny prank that was played. On some would-be kind of interviewer goers. You may have seen this before. It was an LG advert. But we'll see. Thank you. You know, it's funny sometimes as well, though, how even imminent death can get you to reevaluate your priorities a little bit, right? In that moment, I really wonder what was going through their minds as they saw that coming down. And for us today, we do have to reevaluate sometimes. If the world really did end yesterday, how would you feel about that? If that was really it, would you be excited about Jesus' return? Or would fear strike your heart? What would it be? I think today that it's the same calling for us. It is to give up everything we have to become his disciples. And what does that look like? That doesn't necessarily look like, well, we quit our jobs, we sell our houses, and maybe it does. Maybe that's your calling. But and whatever it takes to follow Jesus the way he calls us to, whatever it takes to make disciples in our lives, whatever it takes to follow his commandments, whatever it takes to put him as number one in our lives. And for you this morning, what is the biggest challenge when it comes, maybe you're considering following Jesus, maybe you're not sure. What is the biggest challenge for you, the thing to give up, the thing to let go of, the thing to surrender? And maybe it's simply a sense of control and fear of God being in control of your life. Maybe it's job prospects. Maybe it's university ambitions. Maybe it's a relationship you have in your life or potential romantic interests. What is it? Maybe if you've been a Christian for a long time, have you picked up along the way? Have you added on to your Christianity that you need to let go of, that you need to offload that burden? You know, sadly, recently, and many of us probably don't know who this is, but Lillian Bettencourt, she was the L'Oreal heiress, and she recently died, unfortunately, at an old age of 92, and she left behind her £30 billion from her fortune, £30 billion. If one of your relatives left behind £30 billion, how might you feel? Fired up, right? I mean, you might think, oh, that's awesome. All right, what we could do with that? You'd be really excited about that. But I think it gets you to think, well, that doesn't mean anything to her anymore. And really, what will that money do, or where will it go? Whose pockets will it really line, and what good will it do? That her entire life, really, what did it amount to? And I share that because for us today, what do we want our lives to count for? What do you want your legacy to be? What do you want your life to mean? When you look back at the end of your life, what do you want to say you've achieved? Is it rising up in a job prospect? Is it earning a certain amount? Is it owning certain things? Or is it leaving behind faithful disciples who followed in your wake? This is a challenge for parents, I think, as well. When you think of your kids, what your ambition for your children is. Is it to be successful and academic and achieve in so many different areas? Or is it to be faithful disciples who make other faithful disciples? Is it to have a good spiritual life and be in good standing with God? And for us, for those who are young or for old, it's reevaluating the same question. What do I want my life to count for? Because when Jesus calls people to follow him, he offers them a life of meaning and of purpose. He truly offers an epic invitation. But for us, it takes monumental consideration. Really thinking, what is it going to take for us to follow Jesus? And it also takes unconditional surrender. Thank you very much.
I want to thank Jack for it's actually quite a challenging lesson, because, you know, even when he talked about this whole idea of how do we evaluate church, or how do we evaluate even our Christianity? Is it more like a cruise ship? Are my needs being met? Is this comfortable? Do I appreciate the captain of the crew and his crewmen? Or am I enjoying the service that they offer? Or are we more of the mindset that we are actually part of a global mission, and this is more meant to be a battleship that we're a part of? And, you know, it is challenging, particularly as you mentioned at the end, if you've been a Christian for a while, that you can pick up just bad habits along the way. That you can be looking, if you're like me, you like your creature comforts. You like your comfortable lifestyle. He was showing that video clip at the end and of the potential end of the world. But then I thought, whoa, 84-inch ultra-high definition TV. Wouldn't that be nice? When the reality is that we are actually meant to be soldiers on a mission field. That this isn't our home. We're not meant to be settled here. that we are part of changing people's eternal destinies. That's what we are called to do. And so when Jesus calls us to follow him, he calls us with the proviso of, you've got to put me first. That you've got to hate even your own life. And you've got to be willing to give up everything. Unless you give up everything you have, you cannot be my disciple. That's challenging. And it's a good reminder for each and every one of us. Today, I really hope that you desire to follow Jesus so you can be with him for all eternity. And not just to be a Christian so that your needs can be met. Let's thank Jack again for a really excellent lesson. You may have noticed that a number of people are missing today.